Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
My guest today, as I say, you will know his voice, especially if a week from tonight, a week from right about now, you are down at Tim Hortons Field and you hear a little bit of this.
Let's go, Ticats!
There you go. That is Mike Neighbors, the voice, the PA voice, the stadium, in-stadium voice of your Hamilton Ticats. Next week, your home opener.
Can't wait. Yeah. So excited. I think, all things being equal, it looks like, you know, this could be a really great year for us. So I'm pumped up, man.
You know, I hope you're right, yeah. Although I believe we've said that 24 seasons in a row. Let's say 24 is the right one.
You know, and it's the CFL. I mean, you just don't know, right? It's anything and everything can happen, which is why we love the game so much. And but you know what? I'm gonna get my ducks in a row, and I'm gonna say, yeah, let's go for it. Let's get the Grey Cup here in Hamilton.
Yeah, well, you will have the Grey Cup here
in
Hamilton.
Yeah, well, we gotta win it in Hamilton.
Do you get to do the Grey Cup games?
I did the last one.
And so
here.
You'll do this one.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. Now, traditionally, the CFL didn't allow the home announcer to do it.
Oh.
They would always, first of all, I don't speak French, so they would want a bilingual announcer. And then, so they always brought, the CFL brought somebody in. And it was the Ticats. God bless them. Put up a fight. Said, no, he's the voice of the stadium. He needs to be
nice.
Doing it. And they fought it. And so they had this gal, I wish I could remember her name. She did the French. I did the English, and I was not allowed to root my team on like I normally do. So that's why I think they used to not like to have the home announcer do it. So I was kind of kept. I wasn't allowed to, hey, give it up for your defense, all that stuff. But anyway, I got to do it. The Arkells put on a show to remember, and it was a game to remember. I mean, so close. Could have been anyone's.
It could have been. Yeah. You know, we'll see. We'll see what this year. So do you I mean, you don't do anything. Like singers, before they go on the – before they go on stage, they warm up their voice. Do you do anything?
Do you
show up and let it rip?
I just walk in and let it rip. It's funny because, of course, when I started doing it, I was working in radio. And I was working in radio 5 days a week, whatever. And now I've been out of radio a couple of years, and now I'm starting to get hoarse towards the end of games. So my vocal muscles were a lot tougher when I was using them every day, and now I don't use them every day. So now I don't do any warm-ups, but I am very cognizant of the fact that...
In the car, just screaming at yourself.
That's right.
On the way down,
yeah.
Trying to scream.
I got to be very careful I don't burn them out before the end of a game.
So other than the Grey Cup game then,
yeah.
What are the rules, or are there any about what you can say or do to try and get the crowd pumped up?
There's rules. The main rule is once the quarterback has left the huddle, once the huddle's broken, I have to be done talking. Music has to be off. We can make all the noise we want right up until that moment. And
anything you are not allowed to, I mean, obviously you're not going to be swearing and stuff, but anything you're not supposed to be saying, or is it sort of left to you to come up with what you want?
It's just left up to me. One of the things I got in trouble once, I started an Argo suck chant, and it was the Ticats who were upset about it. They said, they do it. That's cool.
Yeah.
It's cool that our fans do it. Really don't want you getting them pumped up to do it. So, so there are some, you know, some things that you kind of avoid.
I know Bob Young, early in his time as owner of the Ticats, was really not a fan of the Argo suck thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he's kind of, he could speak for himself,
yeah.
And I don't want to be speaking, but I think he's kind of just thrown up his hands and said, it's going to happen.
It
we
is.
Don't have to necessarily have you leading it, but
that's right.
You know what, it's what it is. It's,
yeah.
You know, we don't need to go the next step with the line about the Alouettes. That's a whole different thing. But yeah, it is what it is. But no, do you just come up with the stuff on the fly, or do you actually plan some stuff that you're going to say before you do it?
You know what? I used to write stuff. I used to write lines ahead of time. Now I have a bunch that I rely on, and my favorite one is I need more cowbell, and you know, the old SNL sketch.
Yes,
I always thought that was kind of funny. So I have two or three that I kind of rely on, and then otherwise it's what I'm feeling. I like to make it kind of like radio, right? I like to keep it in where we are in the calendar, if it's a hot July night, if it's a late September fall game, or what they say, so you kind of, you know, if you love fall. I remember one night I did, it was the Labor Day Classic, and I said, if you're excited about the kids going back to school, make some noise. And I wonder, got a huge cheer then. So, just kind of having some fun with it.
But I guess there were things. There are lines you can't cross. You know, if there's a call that doesn't go the Ticats' way, if you were to yell, throw your beer cans at the officials, that would probably not go well.
Yeah, no. I'm the guy who gets to announce. Remember the last year, maybe 2 years ago? Anyway, they gave out the mini footballs.
Yeah.
And then they rained down on the field, and I had to be the guy who goes, please resist from throwing the footballs on the field.
There has never been, I don't think, a giveaway of a projectile that has not ended up with all of them flying onto the field.
Don't know what you're thinking, right?
And for whatever reason, the more projectile-ish the gift,
yeah,
the more likely the home team is going to have a bad game.
That's right.
Some sort of weird Murphy's Law there. That if you were to give people like feather pillow, they're fine. It's never going to make it. But if you gave people, you know, metal footballs, they'd lose 40-0 and there'd be all kinds of bad calls.
No, you're 100%
right. It's a fun gig. And now, I mean, the door, I was thinking this as I was driving in today, the door for you, if you decide you want to be, you know, Mr. Ron McLean Punster with Bo Levi.
Oh, yes.
You know, Bodacious. That's Bodiful. You got a million now that you could play.
There is. Yeah, I did the one preseason game with Bo. He only was in for two snaps
series,
or something.
Yeah.
And we'll come up with something, especially if they're putting on a show. The hardest part of the job, and I know Jason Farr, who
preceded you.
He preceded me, and of course I work with him on our podcast and TV show. And I know he got the season that he did, they were terrible. And there's nothing worse than trying to get the crowd to make some noise when they're down 40-7.
Uh-huh.
So that's those late in those games. Oh, it's tough, man. That's a tough gig. But otherwise, it's all good.
Let me just offer one more word of advice. Don't encourage them, as you know, to throw beer cans on the field. And if the Ticats are not playing well, and now you got Bo Levi Mitchell, boring. Probably not.
We won't go there, brother. No, you don't hear that from me.
All right. Well, we got a week. Mike's got a week to figure out what's going to come up. As I say, this time next week, the Ticats will be warming up. I think it's a
7:30
start against the Alouettes next week. This week's game Sunday in Toronto.
Yeah.
So
a bunch of Cats fans, I'm sure, going to that one too. So,
well, you know what? You talk about projectiles. The Argos are giving out replica Grey Cup rings.
Oh, what
do you think Ticat fans want with an Argos Grey Cup ring? Those things are going to be flying.
They will be flying.
Someone's gonna be in hospital with a Grey Cup ring embedded in the head one that was thrown from the upper bleachers. Don't do that if you're listening.
No,
we're not telling you to
do
that.
Absolutely not.
Just don't do that. Mike, this is a twist. We thought this might be coming. We've heard about this months ago, and they weren't sure what was going to happen with cities like Hamilton.
Right.
But today it's announced that she will have strong mayor powers, which it's for those who don't really understand, and I think that's a lot of us who don't know all the nuances yet, she's not Manuel Noriega. She's not, you know,
carte blanche.
She's not the dictator of a banana republic at this point, but it gives her a lot more ability to push things through or to break deadlocks, or what do you think about the idea?
You know what? I mean, it's my first thought. I'll be honest with you. I was kind of hoping Andrea would use just her mayor's powers before they gave her superpowers. And I really haven't felt like, and I really like Andrea. I've met her several times. I've never worked with her or anything, but I really don't, I haven't felt like she's been leading the city so far. And it's not because of a lack of power. It's I just don't think she's taken the bull by the horns. I haven't seen, you know, newspaper articles about motions where she's leading the charge and saying, let's change this, let's do this, and getting council behind her, which is what I believe a mayor should do, the only person elected by all of the city. That being said, this extra power, under the guise of it has to fall within the provincial desire, right? It has to, the things she can use it for have to be provincial priorities, which primarily is a housing thing.
Yeah.
And so if it's used correctly, Then I'm all for it.
The question, it's an interesting word you use about correctly, because I was saying with Scott Thompson last hour, we were talking about this, and correctly will be in the eye of the beholder.
Sure will.
If she does something that you like, it'll be a great use of those extra powers. If it's something you don't like, it'll be an abuse of power that we shouldn't have given a mayor. So we'll have to see. It's an interesting thing, though, you say about her, because I've been debating, we're 6 months-ish, 7, 8 months, whatever it is, since they were voted in, or since they were sworn in, pardon me. And I've really wondered if Andrea Horvath has been using this first year to try to not look like a lot of the people who didn't vote for her worried she might be.
Okay.
As the longtime NDP leader, I know there were a lot of people in town who thought, oh man, we're going to get the wild, loopy lefty who comes in. And I almost wonder if there's, maybe not, but if there's something a little strategic about this, just to say, everyone take a breath. Yeah. I'm not going to be, you know, I have to be a little more for everybody as the mayor of the city. I don't know. We'll see how that plays out. But I've wondered about that, whether it's an intentional thing to not come in and push all kinds of stuff that everyone who didn't want her then says, see?
Yeah. It's interesting, though, because even on the issues that have come up, it's, you know, it's quite often I'm hearing quotes and comments from all kinds of different councillors, and I'm not hearing a lot from Mayor Horvath, and I'd like to. I mean, she is, again, the representative of the entire city, and so I'd like to know where, and you know, she votes and she goes to the meetings and she says stuff. I'm not suggesting she's not doing her job. I just, her job, in my mind, is a leadership role, is to step out there. And if she's doing what you're suggesting, okay, but...
And I don't know that's the case.
No, but now you've had a chance to get a sense of things. I would like to see you put some of your thoughts into action. We have some problems in this city.
We do.
And we need them tackled, and we need somebody to start suggesting things instead of just, and it is ad nauseum, sending it for a staff report, sending it for a staff report.
Yep.
I'd like to see less staff reports and more, you know, let's get something done.
If you look at the electoral map from the last municipal election for the mayor, it was very clearly delineated. The old city of Hamilton voted for Andrea Horvath.
Yep.
The surrounding entire area did not vote for Andrea Horvath. Yep. So again, I don't know whether this is a strategic thing to try and look at less, not partisan, but maybe less partisan. But nonetheless, your point about now that she has these extra powers. I mean, clearly the two things that have been front and center, the issues so far, housing, which also then ties into encampments.
Yep.
Presumably, she would have an ability now under these new strong power rules to affect change in both of those things, presumably.
I would think that you could find pathways.
Yes.
And that would be certainly my suggestion. Again, how much you can do as a mayor with regard to housing is... You know, you can get rid of the red tape.
You can get rid of red tape, yeah.
That's kind of it, though. I don't want to see them investing in housing. I don't want to see the city building housing.
But if you talk to developers in this city, and I've talked to a number over the years, they will tell you, and look, they have their own biases.
Sure.
But they will tell you that it is pull your hair out frustrating sometimes to try and get something done in the city. That the process and the time frame and everything else, if she does nothing else with this new power, if there's a way to expedite some of those things to get things built, that would be great. Yeah. That would be great. And you're right. I mean, there's a lot of people who would say, I don't really necessarily want the city to spend $500 million building new apartment buildings.
Right.
But if you can clear a way for these things for other people who want to build them to do it.
100%.
Bingo. There you go. There's your there's your strong mayor power that can be used for good.
And as I was listening actually to Scott Thompson before, and he had Colin DeMello on. And one of the things Colin DeMello talked about, which I thought was interesting, was the strong mayor can help defeat some NIMBYism, which is huge, right? Because everybody's like, we need more, low income housing, but just not in my area. And so she would, if she was decided to push a project through or help clear the way for a project, even if that counselor was against it, she only needs 1/3 of council to support her, and she can then push
and you
that
can
through.
Find that.
Absolutely.
You can find that on this council,
well,
no matter which
because
direction.
Because the rest of the council is going, it's not in my area. Okay, well.
But regardless, I mean, if you look at the breakdown of this city council, you can find a third for mm-hmm. almost anything if you decide that's all you need.
Yeah.
No matter what you want to do.
Yeah.
It'll be very, very interesting. And you know, the encampment thing, same thing with the NIMBYism. I mean, it's that probably is more even fraught than some of these other things. If you suddenly decide, if this is within the rules, we're all learning about this as we go along.
Yeah.
But if for example, creating this, they've sent it back for a study, as you point out, but the idea of these giant encampments.
Right.
If she were to decide, okay, we're going to do this, where she puts that one. Right, I'm telling you, that is the kind of thing that is fraught.
Well, we were all looking, you know, when I was working with Councillor Farr, we were all looking for a place for the tiny homes.
Yep.
And even that was fraught with all kinds of problems, because every time you sort of identified a place, everybody in that surrounding area was like, whoa! So, you know, it that's a problem. Somebody's going to have to, but we got to get through the deadlock. We got to get through the logjam. And if maybe some stronger powers for the mayor helps us get through that, then maybe that's not such a bad thing.
Yeah. And as I say, though, the one thing that's going to be really interesting about this is, it's good if you agree with what she decides. It's terrible if you disagree with what she decides. And that's always politics.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, I mean, people who love the prime minister and the fact that he can corral his caucus and you say, well, he's, you know, he's too, you know, when it was Stephen Harper doing that, well, he's too much of a dictator.
Well,
you know what? It's whether you like the person or don't, whether you like their ideas or don't, it's either really good or that's a person's out of control and they're a dictator.
I you know what? I like the way you put that because I think that's the problem right now is it's always about the person and it's not about the idea. And it's like there's way too many people who are upset with anything Trudeau proposes because it's Trudeau. And that's not how democracy works. It's the idea we should be debating. We've said this for a long time, right? Politics shouldn't be about the people, but we
make it about the people.
And it keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And it's like, dude, like is the idea good or not? And you can be against the idea and not like the idea, that's fine. But it has very little, my brother-in-law was complaining to me the other day that, you know, that Trudeau was making him bankrupt. And I'm like, because he has to pay taxes. And I'm like, dude, that's not true.
You know,
we all pay taxes, dude. Trudeau's not making you bankrupt, dude.
You know, it'd be a really interesting idea. And you've just given me an idea here as we're sitting here. I never thought of this before. We should have politics done the way of the TV show The Voice.
Right. You turn your chair around.
So someone puts forward an idea.
Right.
And we are not allowed to know which party has proposed it.
I love it.
And we debate the idea.
Yes.
And then once it's debated, then the party says, we did that. And you might be surprised.
Scotty, I think you might have something here.
Brother. I'm telling you.
We could do that. Could be a global TV show, man. We could have politics, the ideas, debate the ideas, not the parties, not the personalities, debate the ideas.
I bet you that if you did that, and of course, not in a trillion years is that ever going to happen, but if you did that, I bet you that there would be a lot of conservatives that would say, there's some things the liberals do that I support, and
100%.
There's some things that the liberals would say, I like that idea, only to find out that it was a conservative idea. I guarantee that would be the case.
I would turn my chair around for that idea, brother.
Let's be in touch with someone about that one. This is a story that has been obviously talked about a great deal for the last week or two is the Paul Bernardo story. I want to leave the political side aside for a second, which is hard to do because it's become such a political scandal now with Mendocino and all this stuff about who knew what and when we knew and everything else and all this stuff. That you know, we can have that discussion. We can keep having that discussion. I'm sure we will. But the other day I was sitting here thinking to myself, why does Paul Bernardo, of all the people we've had, Clifford Olson and we've had other, why does Paul Bernardo still hit every single button that drives people bonkers? And I mean, look, I understand there were young girls and I understand all that he did. I get it was horrendous.
Yeah.
But it's almost like it's on an entirely different plane than anyone else who's ever murdered anybody.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
And it wasn't even as many. Like, you know, I mean, there are others who...
Well, he's got the Scarborough rape. I mean, you add up all of his victims.
Right.
And
Clifford Olson.
Yeah.
I mean, in no way am I diminishing.
I'm not diminishing this at all. But it's...
But I do understand what
you're saying. It's an amazing thing that if you say the name Paul Bernardo, instant reaction.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he sort of became the epitome of evil for a whole generation that grew up at that time, right? So when it happened, and all that time after, that kind of is maybe in some minds it's kind of the most evil thing we'd seen. And it did happen here.
That's
true. As opposed to, God forbid, but Clifford Olson happened in BC, and so the fact that it happened here, that we watched it day in and day out, it's just like it gives you goosebumps just even hearing his name.
It's so interesting to me though with this story, because there are people, the system certainly, but there are people who very strongly disagree with the idea of capital punishment. There are people who very strongly disagree with jail as a punitive thing as opposed to a rehabilitative thing, or we want to get people prepared to come back into society somehow. That seems to go away with this. It's interesting when you put the worst of the worst in that position. A lot of people then say, well, but for that, though, I'd make an exception.
Oh, yeah.
Right? For him, sure. I don't want capital punishment, sure. But for him, yeah. I'm fine with capital punishment.
I've never been a proponent of capital punishment. However, it's such a weird thing, but I've always felt to myself, it's my own personal opinion, that's all it is, but I always thought, if he's in a jail cell, let him have shoelaces and a belt. I mean, just if he...
Ted Kaczynski.
If he wants to take himself out, then let him. And it's not because I want him to escape all the horrors that he did or whatever, but it's just, to me, we spend an inordinate amount of money taking care of him. And that bothers me. So it's like, you know, you've got him in a cell and you're making sure he can't take himself out. So the dude could live to 90, right? I mean... It's like, you know, supply him with, let him just have shoelaces. And if he figures something out.
what really bothers me about him, and when we talk about this, when it always comes up, and it came up again in this one, is whether you believe in capital punishment or don't, whether you think that he should be released into the general population, which would basically
so
be capital punishment,
take care of him, right,
whatever.
Yeah.
But
when
this story came up again, the thing that drives me bonkers about this is when they talk about his privacy rights. And it's like, wait a second, how, leave aside all that other stuff, how does a prisoner who's in for multiple rapes and multiple murders, how does a prisoner have any privacy rights in this country?
Right.
Surely you abdicated those
right.
when you did that.
Right.
That, all the other stuff we can debate all day long, right. I don't know that anybody other than the officials, and the psychologists or whoever who somehow talk about, well, we have to get these people back ready to come into society again.
Work with them, yeah.
Who believes that he should have any kind of privacy rights?
Not me, brother. And as far as I understand it, right, he also has the right to vote. He's the same right as you and I.
Yeah, probably. I haven't thought of that, but
that's,
we're not going to go down the path, I'm sure, but we're not going to go down the path in this country to capital punishment, because I don't see that there's an appetite for it, and no party probably wants to open that debate.
Yeah.
It's a very laden with, problems if you want to do that. But again, if you were to say, look, when you are sent to jail for life, if you get life in prison, you lose your rights to privacy and stuff. When you're moved around, people are going to know it. If you have a bail here, a hearing, we're going to videotape it. We're going to show your parole hearing. And
right.
Like, why? This is the one thing that I can't get around
right.
is why does this person have rights?
Yeah. I'm going to throw out this bothered me. And that's why I remembered it. The statistics are like got to be 7 years old. Now you could look them up. I'm sure things have changed, but not for the better. But the statistics, 7 years ago, was at that time, we were spending $125,000 a year to take care of Paul Bernardo.
Mm-hmm.
And it was specific to Bernardo. And at that time, the average senior getting government assistance was getting about $76,000 a year. So you kind of go, okay, is there something wrong with that picture? Is there something wrong? You know, the meals, the money we spend on the meals for Paul Bernardo is more than the money we spend on meals in nursing homes. Like there's something cockeyed about
but
the
But it's the rights, again, and...
Well, but he shouldn't have those, right? I mean, I'm not suggesting you starve him. I'm not suggesting... But at the same time...
It doesn't have to be stale bread and moldy water, but I don't... You're right. I mean,
but
of course
you're
right.
But the senior citizen that didn't kill anybody deserves to be taken care of as well as... the worst citizen that we've ever had.
Yeah, no, this always...
But it all gets us all in a...
Well, it gets everybody going.
Now you got me all...
It gets everybody going. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that you just, like... You're right, it is a local story. The people around here... And I don't know that... I don't know... I mean, how old would you have to be? I mean, he's been in... It's almost 30 years that he's been... Since this has all been happening, since the Scarborough rapist, it's a 30-year thing. So you would have to be at least 35 or 40 to have even a fleeting memory, probably 50 to really remember the story and the horror of the story. But
although I'm sure there were some kids who caught glimpses and bits and pieces of those stories as it traveled around, right, who gave them nightmares, who... Like it was so horrific, and it was everywhere, and I'm sure there are kids who were impacted by it who still remember things that they shouldn't have.
But I go back to the rights thing, and that is, I really believe. So if you move him to a medium security prison, to me, this is a step. Is it a step towards someday him getting day parole? I don't know, but it's a step, and I don't know why he's even getting a step towards something.
Right,
but. If you,
I believe it will cost us less.
Well, but if you took away, if you took away these rights to privacy, and so that the parole hearing had to be public, if it was televised or even just streamed online, I really believe that those people on the parole board, if they're even remotely open to the idea of, well, maybe, you know, he's showing improvement.
Yeah.
You would squash that. There is not a single person sitting on a parole board who is going to allow themselves, if it's public, to be the one who says, I'm okay with him getting anything, moving to a lesser prison, getting anything. There, you would be scorned if you were on that parole board and you publicly, people knew who you were and you gave him anything. Maybe that's the way to do it.
And I guess that's why the political thing has blown up, right? Because people want heads to roll. People want to know who was it? Who at Corrections Canada was it that went, Bernardo? Yeah, okay, we'll send him.
Or who didn't somehow know?
Or who didn't tell?
But I got to look it up to make sure I got
Corrections
this right.
Canada works independent of the government. They tell the government what they're doing. They do not take orders from the government. So that's one of the disparities, I think, in the thing. Is like, you know, Mendocino and his staff didn't say do this. Corrections Canada works independently, and they don't have, it's not direct input by the government. So, although, again, my brother-in-law will probably blame Trudeau for this one.
Well, Mike, it was last week, a week or so ago, that Granddad's Donuts opened up again to great fanfare. They did all their...
saw the lineup.
Did all their renos and everything else. And we were going to talk about this the other day. I was going to talk about this, and I don't know, something got in the way. But we had a debate. I don't know who I was talking to about what is the Hamilton food, the Hamilton restaurant, the Hamilton eating establishment. If you were saying what is the place that is most, there's Granddad's is in the discussion
for sure.
Monster Donut might be one. Tim Hortons, I'm on a very broad scale.
Yeah.
Easterbrook's, I know that's Aldershot. It's not technically Hamilton, but what would be the place that you would say is the... And by the way, while Mike is pondering this, because I'm catching him cold, and the look on his face is saying, please, stall for time while I think about this.
That's okay.
Send us a text, 905-645-3221. What is the Hamilton food place?
I will tell you my Hamilton food place, okay? Whether it's everybody, I mean, it's kind of an open question. My Hamilton food place is the Capri Ristorante. It's been there forever on John Street. And I spent a lot of time, still live on the West Mountain, and I live in an Italian neighborhood. And all the guys in my Italian neighborhood would always talk about the fact that when they were growing up down in the North End, that's where you got pizza. That's where they all got, you know, the Italians all said that was the best pizza. And since then, my wife and I have been there a ton of times. And in fact, up above Capri Ristorante, they have the Blue Grotto, which was a 60s nightclub.
Oh, I thought that was at the Playboy Mansion.
It was kind of like that. It's done like a cave.
It was like that.
Yes, it's got stalagmites hanging from the ceiling, and it's all blue light. It's kind of a funky place. So I guess in the 60s, it was the happening nightclub. It kind of fell into disrepair. Capri has brought it back. And we used it for my daughter's wedding. My daughter got married there in February, and we had a reception for about 80 people, and it was fantastic and great food. And so Capri is definitely my Hamilton restaurant.
Yeah, no, it's a great answer. It's a tough one because, I mean, I can't even think of the name of it now. There used to be a German restaurant on Augusta or on... Old Salzburg Inn.
Yes.
And we had our wedding rehearsal dinner there. And that would have been, but it's gone. It's long gone.
Okay. So
maybe Black Forest Inn now.
Black Forest was good. Yeah, I've been there.
Go for the Pusta. Oh, the Pusta's fantastic. Yeah. The hot peppers on the schnitzel. And
Do you remember the place? It was on James. You'd go downstairs. That was the steak place that was down in the basement.
Shakespeare's?
No, it was, what was it called? It was, I don't remember. Anyway, it was so good there. That's a bunch of years ago now, but there was a great steak place and you'd go, it was down in the basement on James.
Well, the other place, and again, it was German. I don't know why I'm stuck. Maybe because I'm hungry and I'm thinking of vast amounts of meat, but there was a German restaurant on Main Street. And the chef's name, we used to know the chef a lot. His name was Helmut. And it was always a great story because he'd been bitten by a shark. If you went to the dinner, you got to hear about the time he was bitten by a shark. Yeah, you got the story with
it. That's awesome.
And you would get it was either the hunter's platter or the farmer's platter.
Okay.
And it would be like a hock of ham and a giant sausage and a huge schnitzel and like all the stuff. It was enough meat that you would like go home and have the meat sweats and wild meat dreams for the whole night.
You went in and told Helmut that you were a vegan. He would he'd bite you.
there was no. I mean, you could, sauerkraut, I suppose.
I suppose there was not a lot of room there.
There was not sirloin cellar
Sirloin cellar. Sirloin cellar.
Thank you to Doug for the text on there.
Yeah, I blanked, but my wife and I had many an anniversary at the Sirloin Cellar. Fantastic food there. It's too bad it's long gone.
The funny thing is, and by the way, the phone lines are just, Ben is taking calls here. We'll get the answers from Ben in a minute, but what people are saying, it kind of is funny to me that our immediate answer, maybe it's because we're used to it, maybe it's because times change. I would have thought that the immediate answer would have been Tim Hortons.
What's more Hamilton, right?
And yet, maybe because of the new ownership, the American ownership, maybe because things have changed, maybe because again, we don't even think of it now that way.
I don't anymore. No, you're right. Yeah. I don't think of it that way. But that would have been, our stadium's name for it and everything. But
everything.
I don't. It doesn't feel like Hamilton's Tim Hortons anymore. And no knock against Tim Hortons. They've grown and turned into a monster of an organization, and people stop at Timmy's every day to get their coffees and their luxury. But I don't think of it as Hamilton's Tim Hortons anymore.
No, I would, and Granddad's Donuts and Monster Donuts. I mean, they've kind of nudged their way. If you're going to have a great donut, I'm not sure that. If you're looking just for a great donut, I'm not sure Tim's is your first choice in this city now. Those places are.
Absolutely not. Yes, I would go to a place that's putting their heart and soul into the donuts, making them fresh every day.
Oh, yeah. And the
Granddad's, I did a radio station remote at Granddad's one morning.
How did you eat that day?
You know what? I'm afraid to say. I was probably up around 13 or 14 donuts. And I can eat. I'm a pretty good eater. So, we started at 5:30 in the morning. And the first thing was an eclair. And I just went from there. And it was like, oh, yeah. I was on
riding the wave.
Serious sugar high.
Yeah, riding the wave. Years ago, when Jim Balsillie was buying the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Right.
His first effort to bring an NHL team to Hamilton. This is a long time ago now. He was going to have a press conference in the first intermission of the Saturday night game in Pittsburgh and announced that he was buying the team. And so work said, can you get to, like at 10 in the morning, they said, can you get to Pittsburgh? Right. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll get to Pittsburgh. So I just jumped in the car and I got to Erie And they have a Krispy Kreme right off the highway there.
Oh.
And I grabbed a box of Krispy Kreme donuts and talk about riding the wave.
Oh, those like things are loaded.
Three
man.
Of those, oh, and yeah. you are on a sugar buzz doing 130.
That's right.
And then 10 minutes later, you've crashed and you're like, I need more Krispy Kreme.
I do. Yes, exactly.
It is like heroin in donut form.
It is. I know. You're lucky you didn't go into a diabetic coma.
I'm sure it was pretty close. We got to go. But Ben, who were people calling? Were people calling in with answers?
Oh, yeah. We had people calling in. Apparently, the Innsville is a great one to go to. And the other one was something that they don't remember the name of, but on Highway 20 in Dunsmuir, they had buffets on Sunday mornings and brunch. And apparently, they made the best pina coladas.
Ooh, there you go.
Love me a pina colada.
We could use one of those right now.
Yeah.
We'll see if we can whip one up for the second hour.
Great. Get on that.
Mike Neighbors will be back. I'll be back. Ben will be back. Hour number two coming up after this. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
The brightest conversation in Hamilton Radio. Conversation requires more than one person. Sitting with me today, the voice, the in-stadium voice of the Hamilton Ticats, who will have their home opener this time next week. At this time next week, he will be bellowing. You will hear him in Stony Creek as he introduces the team for the first game of the year. His name is Mike Neighbors. How are
yes,
you?
Yes, I'm doing great. Yeah. And listen, by the way, thanks for having me.
No.
I never thanked you off the top of the show, but I do appreciate you calling, and more than happy to come in and enjoy your bright conversation.
Well, and you will hear Mike next week, and I am only half joking about hearing you in Stony Creek. If you are within the if you can see Tim Hortons Field, will hear Mike.
Yeah, it rings out pretty good, I bet. I'm always there yelling, so I don't know. I don't see how far it goes, but
well, several years ago, it wasn't you, but several years ago, and it sounds like a sad story, but it's more to the point. Is we had a family member who was not doing well in the hospital up on the mountain. Jervinsky.
Jervinsky, yes.
And she had a room that looked downward.
Right.
I can't remember who, I think it might have been, who was the, what's his name, the country singer at the first concert, married to Nicole Kidman.
Keith Urban.
Keith Urban. I think it was Keith Urban who was playing.
It was rocking.
But from her room, you could hear it almost clear
That's
as a bell.
Awesome.
And so I am sure that up on the mountain,
yeah,
people can hear you when you're calling stuff from the
stadium.
Make
some noise!
Make some noise, and up on the mountain when they're having a barbecue, like, could you please not? By the way, speaking of comments, I had to tell you this one because I was very puzzled just during the break. I saw this. Maybe someone can explain this, but I don't know. President Biden was giving a speech on gun control today in Washington, and for reasons that, and if you read the story, no one has yet been able to figure out why.
Oh,
he wrapped up his speech with "God save the Queen, man."
Wow, and the Queen's no longer with us, so that
they're
was
not,
wrong.
They're not exactly a member of the Commonwealth.
Yeah. God bless America is what he's supposed to say.
God save the Queen, man.
Wow, man. Yeah, man.
That is so. The pool reporter for the pool reporter who was doing this, people were saying, was there something we were missing? What was he talking about? The pool reporter's like, I got no idea.
No, nothing.
Nobody knows. And his staff, apparently, when they asked, was that intended? They're like, we don't know.
Yeah, that wasn't on the teleprompter.
That was not there. No, that was on the teleprompter in the head somewhere. The mysterious teleprompter. That's anyone who could try and explain why Joe Biden was finishing a speech with God save the Queen, man.
I like that he added the man at the end.
They get a special prize for that one.
It's very Joe Biden.
Joe Biden was also today, there's video, what is her name from, there's an actress who was, it's Friday, I'm not even thinking of names these days. Anyway, he was greeting her on the White House lawn and getting a little handsy.
Eva Longoria. Eva
Longoria almost got... A little.
Joe's been accused of being handsy before. So.
She did an amazing martial arts move to, without making it look obvious,
to separate herself from the president.
Yeah, you know, he's
God save the Queen, man.
God save the Queen, man. There you go. So, We are talking about all kinds of stuff from this week and others and issues that are still going on. This is one we talked about a few weeks ago, and it is they're closing part of King Street, I believe, this weekend for a street
run
event. Yeah. And this comes back to the story that we were talking about a week or so ago, which is the council is moving towards making Main Street two ways and widening lanes and putting in more bike lanes and widening sidewalks. And King Street, at certain points, when you come into the International Village, there won't even be car traffic able to get through there once the LRT is put in.
And that's right.
One of the theories is that when this is all done, I mean, the idea is they're not hiding the fact that we want to slow traffic down.
Yep.
One of the theories is, look, we're going to force people basically to use public transit. Do you think that it's going to have that effect, or do you think it's just going to force people who don't live downtown to never come downtown again because they're sick of the traffic?
I think it'll be both. I think, you know, it'll certainly drive people away from coming downtown unless you absolutely need to or have to or have tickets to something or whatever. So that definitely will happen. I mean, if you clog the streets up, people are going to avoid those streets. So I think that definitely is one of the things that'll happen. But the other idea would be all these condos we're building and the idea is let's get more people into them who don't have cars, who are going to use the shareable autos, who are going to use things like that and get away from being a car-centric city, at least in the downtown core. And probably over the longer haul, that's a win, man.
I do wonder about this and wrote about this a few weeks ago or a couple of weeks ago, but one of the things, the more I've thought about this, we talked last hour about Andrea Horvath and the electoral map, how you had the downtown and you had everywhere else. We have had discussions in this city forever that you've got the lower city versus the upper city, the downtown versus the suburbs, urban versus rural. Does this not run the risk of further dividing us into two cities? If you live outside the downtown, as you just said, you probably need a car. You probably have a car.
Sure, yeah.
And you're not going to want to sit in terrible traffic forever. Do you think it runs the risk that we make it so that people don't want to come downtown?
You know what, though? Honestly, it's already divided. I don't think it makes it any more divided than it already is. I live on the West Mountain. Unless there's a specific reason, I don't come downtown. And honestly, when they amalgamated this city, it's almost, for lack of a better word, ungovernable from that standpoint because the interests of people out in Flamborough
not resonate with those downtown.
It's
vice versa.
Completely different world. You're living in different worlds, man, and that's just the way it is. So it's not going to change anything. I remember reading stories about people like up towards Rockton there, where it's like it'd be 15 minutes to get to Cambridge City Hall, and it's a 35-minute drive to your City Hall. I mean, it's kind of a crazy situation to begin with. So just accept the fact that it's kind of crazy. It's different groups of people in different areas who live their lives differently. But as far as the downtown is concerned, I think progress to me is – yeah, let's have more people who don't need to have cars and they don't need to spend all that money. And that gives them more money to spend on other things like housing, but also maybe other, specialty items and things like
so
that.
So should then, one of the discussions that is always held at City Hall, it's been going on forever and ever and ever, is with public transit. And should we improve public transit out to Rockton or Waterdown or Flamborough or wherever else? Should we even bother to try to do that then? Or should we say, let's spend what we're going to spend, but concentrate it where people are more likely to use it?
100%. That would be, I mean, just that's my humble opinion, is that why are you sending an empty bus out to Rockton and back every day? Doesn't make any sense. That person in Rockton is not going to live without a car. They need a car because they need a car just to get to the
grocery
store. They've
chosen to live there.
That's where they're living.
Yeah.
So why are you, it's, and I guess the idea is because we're taking from the entire tax base, we have to try to provide them some service. But at the end of the day, let's see if we can't rejig those numbers and say if you're, the service needs to be concentrated where it's being used. And that's where you're getting the biggest bang for your buck. So let's be really good at that. And then if you want to start running shuttles or running the one-offs or whatever, you can look at it. But do a good job of delivering the services you can, and don't overextend yourself just because you think there should be a bus that goes to Flamborough once a day.
It's really hard, though, when you've got council that has seemed to suggest that they are going to try and get rid of the area rating thing, to then say, we're going to get rid of area rating, but we're not going to put more buses in your area. You're kind of then taking and taking. And so you're going to, so council almost has to say, we're going to give you more bus service, even if no one's going to use it.
I get that. What I would say is, let's find a way to, you know, whether you have area rating or you don't, let's make sure all parts of the city have the services they require. And it becomes, it's a little like, to me, it's like the baby bonus, right? I mean, if you make over a certain amount of money, why are we still giving you a baby bonus? And we did, we drew that back. To me, it's the same. We have to have some really practical conversations about what do people in Flamborough need, require, as far as basic services are concerned, and let's make sure those are the best they can be. Let's make sure they have great fire service. Let's make sure they have great access to ambulance. But let's not worry so much about transit and concentrate transit. And honestly, bring the cost of transit down a little bit by not overextending it to areas beyond where it's being used.
How do you think a discussion would go that would say, we're going to charge, now we kind of do with area rating, but we're going to intentionally charge different tax rates because downtown, if you live downtown and you get great bus service, we're going to really bump up your taxes, but you're going to have great buses. But if you live out in the country, we're not going to charge you that. We're going to give you a break on your taxes. There's not a council alive that's going to go for that, to move it more that way.
Which is why we're lucky to be on the radio and not running for office, because
not doing that.
Because the sensible thing to me, again, would be, let's, you know, charge people the taxes for the services they're getting. I think different tax rates, I would have no problem with different tax rates.
Are you in favor of, and this goes all into this, of user fees? Bring taxes down by having more user fees?
User fees with government assistance for people who can't afford the user fees. So if you can show me a median income that's at a certain level, I don't want some kid not to be able to use a soccer field.
Agreed.
Because he's, but user fees for, you know, I'm not going to single any area out, but there are areas of our city that are very wealthy. And so should we be spending the same tax pool money to develop services in those areas where those people could help pay for those services themselves? So, I'm all favor for taxing the rich. And speaking of somebody who's not very rich, easy for me to say.
Yeah. I was just trying to keep track of who did you work for? Was it Jason Farr or was it?
These are all my personal opinions. Councillor Farr had some great ideas and did a great service for this city for 12 years. And when I got into his office, and I worked there for about a year and a half, and there were things that we disagreed on. I mean, I absolutely did not agree with everything he believed in. But that's what makes a great friendship, and we talked them through, and he won the argument every time because he was the counselor, and I was just his communications assistant.
You were just
assistant.
A schmo.
I was just the guy who posted it on Instagram, baby.
Mike, the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, as everyone knows, wrapped up. Vegas Golden Knights won. I still am wrapping my head around Vegas having the Stanley Cup. It seems like, I don't know, It feels like they should almost like have a plastic Stanley Cup to give to them. Like somehow it just seems fake or cheap something that a team that's been in the league 6 years.
As a lifelong Leafs fan, this latest core, the core four that we have been together for those 6 years, and we don't have a cup to show for it. So
you have one playoff series.
Absolutely crushing for lifelong hockey fans. But you know what? I thought one of the funniest things for me was, I guess there's a strip club in Vegas that said if the Vegas Knights win, all the players will get free lap dances for life. And so they won. But it just, you got to imagine about 30 years from now, one of these old hockey players going, hey, got the ring.
Yeah, and that's right. And by then it'll have changed ownership.
What are you talking about, pal?
Yeah, free lap, whatever.
Creepy.
So one of the amazing stories, and we hear this every year when the Stanley Cup Finals ends, is the litany of injuries that the teams had when they got through this. The Florida Panthers especially. So Matthew Tkachuk was playing with a broken sternum. One guy was playing with a broken foot. One guy had, and I'm just going through this, Aaron Ekblad broke his foot in the first round and played through that. He also had a torn oblique muscle and dislocated his shoulder twice in the same playoffs, and on and on and on. And every year this happens, every year they go through this, I always come back to the same question. Is this heroic or is this stupid?
I always think, well, first, it's very Bobby Bond of them.
Very much, yes.
Right? Remember the broken leg,
yes.
Right? Working with the Ticats, as I have for the last 13 years, one of the interesting things that I always find is working with the alumni. I love, you know, and you see the old alumni coming into the events and stuff like that. And they're all so crippled up and banged up. And Ange Mosca was the best example of that, but lots of them. And I always think, if I was a young football player, would I be looking at those guys going, is that how I want to spend my 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s?
You know, and they would all say no, but at the same exact moment, if you said, but do you want to sign a contract to play?
I know.
They will sign it that same day.
So, but when it comes to, is it heroic or stupid? First of all, I could not do it through the pain. So, it's heroic from that standpoint. I think that takes a lot of guts to just keep stepping on that broken foot. At the same time, yeah, I think it's stupid when you look at life as being a long journey and, you know, will you be able to pick up your grandkids when they come along because you know, I had to just stick it out. And especially when you're the losing team. I mean, at least if you had a Stanley Cup ring,
yeah,
that's
it
one
eases
thing.
The pain a little bit.
But when you're the losing team.
I'm trying to think who the former Ticat is. It might be Miles Gurrell. And Miles, you know, he's on here calling the Mac games with Ted Mike. I think, and if I've got it wrong, if it's not Miles, I forgive me, Miles. But one of them, and I think it was Miles, has a baby finger that from the middle knuckle turns at a 90-degree angle.
Yes.
From, you know, just getting them caught in masks face masks over the years and breaking and dislocating.
Yeah.
And if it's not him, it's someone else. I always look at that and it's exactly what you're thinking. It's like, all right, well, it's not like you're missing a hand.
No.
It's just, you know, a little bit noticeable. You know?
And the thing, even the finger's one thing, but I was never an athlete. I'm 58. I got knee issues, I have shoulder issues, and I never did anything with my knees or shoulders. So, as long as they know what they're signing up for, good on them, but I would lean more towards stupid from my standpoint.
Well,
and
when
you're putting
your
body on the line like that. It's not, they're not stupid people, but they're making decisions now that I just worry they'll look back and go, wow, you know, I could have had 30 good years.
Yeah, and to me, it is heroic. To me, it is heroic, and I'll tell you why, although there is an element of stupid. Our society, I don't think right now, appreciates or endorses or masculinity is a thing that is a complex issue in our society now.
100%.
And, you know, this is, you know, and if you say masculinity, it's almost now got the word toxic strapped to it no matter what.
Right. It's all one word.
This is if you can be tough enough to play through this, if you've got a goal and you will grind, I'm not saying women wouldn't do the same in their sport.
Sure,
I'm not suggesting that.
They play banged up, you know, the Canadian women's hockey team by the time they get through one of their series.
But they don't have, we don't have a comparable because there is no women's league that has the same level number of playoffs and everything else. We haven't seen. If they did, they would.
Right.
But we don't have that right now. This is a unique thing to men's sports, men's hockey, that you would have guys.
Well, they also
do this.
Don't necessarily produce a list after a gold medal game saying, "Oh, these players were playing on."
No, but even in the Olympics, this is not taking anything away from the women's teams. But even in the Olympics, you play what four round robin games and three or four playoff games. In the playoffs, you've played 82 games, and now you've got to win 16 games, you could technically play 28 games.
Right, right.
And I applaud that there are still guys out there that are still doing this, and there's still a masculine thing that is an amazing achievement of toughing it out, as you say, and everything else.
Yeah.
The stupid part, though, is I do, when you hear, okay, I played with a broken sternum. There's a part of me, I'm no medical doctor, clearly, but it's like, well, isn't that potentially very dangerous? What if you had taken a slap shot in that part of your chest? Could you not have done horrible things to yourself?
You can't. You shouldn't. Why are you doing that?
I mean, a broken foot, you say playing through the pain, but if the doctor has said you're not going to make it any worse and you can tolerate the pain,
yeah,
fine.
Yeah.
But there are other things, as you say, that... Yeah. One of the famous stories, and I think it was Smith. I can't remember his first name. He played for the Leafs for a bit, and he was the captain of the Oilers for a while. One of the stories, he took a puck in the face,
right,
that split him from his nostril to his lip, so that it was basically an open gap.
Wound, yeah,
and it was in the playoffs. Walked into the tunnel, told the doctor, "I don't want to miss time. Stitch me up right here." Didn't even freeze it, and they just stitched him up standing in the tunnel, and missed like four shifts.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, that is not my...
That is tough.
What's the old Arnold Schwarzenegger movie where they're searching for the creature? The alien...
Was Predator?
Predator. And was it him or was it one of the other guys in that movie when they said, "You're Jesse the Body Ventura"?
Right,
and somebody says, "You're bleeding." He goes, "I ain't got time to bleed."
Yeah.
That's what it kind of is like. I ain't got time to bleed.
It is like that. But remember the stories, right, from the early days of hockey and the goalies and where the face mask came from was they would take him back and stitch him up. And Jacques Plante said, "I'm not going back without the mask." And they, "Okay, wear the mask, Jacques."
Do you know that there's a Hamilton connection to that story?
I think I do.
There's
Go
a
ahead.
Hamilton connection. So that was the Montreal Canadiens against the New York Rangers.
Yep.
And Jacques Plante, before that happened, a shift before that, had allegedly given Andy Bathgate a bit of a spear behind the net.
Okay.
And Bathgate goes over to the bench. I heard this from both Andy Bathgate and from Harry Howell, Hamilton guy. They both told me this story. And Harry's on the bench, and he says to Bathgate, "Are you going to let him do that?" And Harry's the nicest man alive.
Yes, he was.
And next time Bathgate got the puck, he says he intentionally took a backhander at Plante's face.
Oh, wow.
And so that was at the urging of Harry Howell and busted him open. And that was when he went off and got the stitches and came back. So it was really, hockey masks are the result of Harry Howell.
Harry Howell prodding on one of his guys.
Prodding Andy Bathgate to take a shot. And... But yeah, and you know, those old clips of, and I'm sure you've seen this one, the old black and white of Johnny Bower pinned to the ice because someone's lying on him, stopping three shots in a row with his face, with his bare face.
Yes, that was, they were different. They were different people. But even, you know, when you talk about toughness now, but even, you know, like I don't watch it myself because I can't stand to watch two men brutally beat each other. But UFC, I mean, that's just, those guys just stand there. It's crazy, man. That's crazy tough. Crazy maybe being the operative word.
When 2006 or 5 or 7, something in there, Jeff Joslin from Hamilton went down to San Diego to the Miramar Marine Base because they had a fight there on the Marine base. And I went down, myself and the photographer from the Spec, Barry Gray, we went down to cover it. And I've seen UFC fights since. But more recently, as the sport and as that has become more popular and bigger, you didn't have access. Back then, it was just getting going.
You stood right up there.
And so they basically, I said, "We're coming down." And they said, "Sure."
Yeah.
And I had a press pass, which at that time gave me access like you would never in a million years get now. So I was in the dressing room. I was at ringside, cage side. I was walking back and forth. And I remember there was a guy, I have no idea what his name was, who fought before Jeff. Jeff is getting his hands all taped up and stuff. And this other guy is fighting, and it's on a little TV in the corner. And this guy got just smiteth. He was leaking everywhere. And he then comes into the same dressing room. They had one big dressing room for all the guys. Again, times change.
Right.
And, you know, you're trying to get ready. Jeff is trying to get ready to go out and fight.
Watching
and
this guy
comes
just,
in and sees this guy looking like a pot of mashed potatoes now,
man,
getting stitched up in ice bags.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at this guy and talking to them, and they loved it. And I'm like, how in the world... And if you've ever met Jeff Joslin?
I have not met him, no.
Jeff is the most mild-mannered, nicest, kind guy you would ever meet.
Right?
And you're like, how in the world do you get yourself into a frame of mind to get into a cage?
Yeah.
And with barely any gloves on,
just start wailing.
Bare knuckle on a guy. And it's
have that guy bare knuckle on you,
yes.
Which is really, like me, you know, punching is one thing.
Yeah, I'll hit someone. Just don't hit me back.
Getting hit? Yeah, that's, but you know, I pain tolerance and all those things being equal, it takes a certain kind of person, I guess.
But I come back to this. When I look at the NHL thing, I always ask that question. Every year when you hear the infirmary report, I always go, stupid or heroic?
Yeah.
And I lean heroic.
Both. Yeah.
If you've got a goal, and these guys for their whole life have dreamed about winning a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
And when months later, we've had the Stanley Cup brought to Hamilton in recent years from various guys who have won it, Ray Emery or Dave Andrechuk or whomever, you get that forever.
Yep.
Like you've got the ring and you've got your name on there forever. And to me, I wish I had that. Whatever it was that would say, I will literally do anything.
I'll walk through a wall.
I will do anything to get the thing that I really want to get. That, again, that's heroic to me.
But then at the end of the Stanley Cup playoffs, you have a broken sternum and no cup.
Well, hopefully you have a cup, or else you might have a broken something else. It always amazes me that hockey players will go on the ice with no face protection
and no
neck protection.
There's only one thing you got,
but they won't step on there without that other cup down there. And it's like, all right, well, we know. We know
what your priorities are.
We know. Yeah. Mike Nabors with me for a few more minutes. The guy who, as I say, about a week from now. Well, actually. A week from now, he will have already hopefully called 7 or 8 Ticat touchdowns. The game will only be 15 minutes old.
That's a little,
little
probably
ambitious.
Won't be that many, but.
Little ambitious. Let's just hope it's not all the other way.
Yes, absolutely.
Sunday's going to be interesting because last week was not good. We'll see what happens. Anyway, you got some other stuff going on here as well as that. We'll get to the podcast in just 1 second, but you are also doing something that I think a lot of people would love to do, which is actually going and getting your big rig trucker's license.
I actually have it now.
You have it now.
I have it.
So you can get into the big rig and
And
now that you have it, every time you drive by a car where a kid in the backyard pulls down, do you blow the horn and go, shut up, I'm tired of that?
I don't have a job driving yet.
But will you? Will you? When that happens, every time the kid pulls it, you'll
absolutely. Yes. All right. It's so funny because when I went to truck driver training school and it was a 6-week program and it was fascinating. And it's something I always loved the idea of doing. And then just ended up with the opportunity to do it. So I did. And I love driving a truck, man. It is so cool being up there. And when you're training, they only let you use what they call the city horn, which is just like meep. And I'm like, really? And they're like, oh, no, that thing. And it is loud, man.
Yep.
And so, but 100%. You get me out on a stretch of highway and some kid wants me to, I am definitely blowing that horn.
You know what the only disappointing thing I would think about driving a truck today is compared to 30 years ago? No CB handle.
Still have CBs.
Do they?
Still use CB handles. Yeah, they
really?
Do. Yeah. They still find it more effective. The truck companies really don't want you talking on your cell phone, so they still use CBs to radio each other what's going on.
Right. And have you got a handle then? Each other.
I don't have a handle. I don't have a truck yet. But here's the interesting thing. This is what I found out, which surprised me, and I found this out after I'd finished truck driving school. So I have an AZ license. I can drive a tractor trailer. But did you know that, so in Ontario, there's labor laws, right? You can only work 40 hours a week. Well, they don't apply to truck drivers. And they expect truck drivers to work 70 hours a week. And that is a lot of hours.
Do truck drivers get paid by the hour or by the trip?
There's various ways. Sometimes it's by the kilometers. Sometimes it's salary and things like that. And truck drivers can make a lot of money. But they expect you to work 14-hour days, and that's one hour for inspection of the truck at either end, and the other 13 you're driving. And I was shocked, frankly, that it wasn't a 40-hour week. There's no 8-to-4 truck driving jobs. They are 6:30 in the morning till 7:30 at night truck driving jobs, and that to me is something that should be changed. It doesn't seem to me, and I'm not certainly blaming that on why there are so many truck accidents because there are just so many trucks. I mean, it really is. But at the same time, I don't think it's fair to truck drivers that they be challenged to work those kind of hours on a day-to-day basis. That's crazy to be driving for 13 hours and working 14 hours every day for 5 days a week.
Well, every time you, if you ever go on YouTube or whatever else and see, they always have these videos of, the trucks with, now they've got the whole apartment in the back, basically.
Yep,
it's like,
yep.
Well, why would I spend all the money then if I'm never going to be able to use it because I'm driving the whole time?
all
I want to do is lie down and have a sleep.
That's all they do, right? When you're out on the road, I mean, you climb in the back, you get your 10 hours off, and then you get back in and you drive, and there's no time to, you're not having friends over, you're not watching movies, you're sleeping or you're driving, and it's a tough life.
So is Smokey and the Bandit your new favorite movie? Or your old favorite movie?
It's always my favorite. I love Smokey and the Bandit. The song Convoy was the one that did it for me. I was a huge fan of the song Convoy when it became a number one hit. I went out and bought a CB dictionary, and I love the vernacular, the language they created for themselves. And so that was sort of where my interest in truck driving began a long time ago. And so now I can drive a truck. Whether I will end up driving a truck for a living or not, I don't know.
Well, you've also got a podcast.
I do.
A podcast, video podcast show. It's the whole multimedia realm.
It's a TV show on Cable 14 every Wednesday night at 7. I host it with Jason Farr. So it's Hammer Down with Jay and Mike. And it's on from 7 to 8 Wednesday nights. And then we spin that in. We take the audio and turn that into a podcast. So if you go to any podcast site, you can look up Hammer Down with Jay and Mike. There's 9 episodes, I think, out there now. We have lots of local guests. We had Jane Eastwood on, the great Hamilton actress. She was on with us. And we've had a bunch of other great guests. And I think it's a kind of a different show for Cable 14 because some of their shows can be quite dry, and Jay and I try to bring a little bit of humor to the set.
I won't say because I do like doing this show, but you guys, one of the show, I was flipping channels one day and saw it, and you made reference, I think, to something, and I thought, wow, this is the new Cable 14. It was a subtle reference to a, shall we say, a sexual maneuver used in a different context. And I was like, all right, this is now Cable 14 after dark.
You know what? And we've been very well received. The Cable 14 people have been great with us. And we play it fast and loose and just have some fun. And I think... I think they're enjoying kind of a different spin, and Jay and I are certainly enjoying doing it. So check that out Wednesday nights at 7 on Cable 14 or the podcast Hammer Down with Jay and Mike.
Or replayed 72 times during the rest of the week.
It is. And we actually got picked up for summer reruns across the whole Cogeco network. So it'll play over the summer. So you're bound to see it. I'm the guy in the cowboy hat with the long hair. Don't confuse me with Jason Farr.
You guys could not possibly look different more different.
A little Mutt and Jeff thing going on.
You guys
there,
could not look like two more different people if you tried, but you don't even need to have your names on the screen.
No,
people just know.
No, exactly.
Mike Nabors, thank you for coming in and doing this. Always love having you on.
Thank you so much for having me. Love the show, Scott. You guys do a great job, you and Ben, cranking it out here, and I love being a part of it, so thank you so much.
Wednesday night, Hammer Down with Jay and Mike. Yeah. You know, if you went with Jay and Big Mike, it would almost be like a return to when he was doing Y108 once upon a time with Jay and Big D.
That's right.
You know, we could go old school here. Folks, have yourself a wonderful weekend. And fathers out there.
Happy Father's Day.
Yes, have a great Father's Day. And, those fathers who, and not to get like all serious and stuff, but those fathers who have stuck around and have been great fathers to their kids, big round of applause to all of you because you make a big difference. You honestly do.
100%. My greatest achievement is that I'm a good dad.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode, and also be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.